Welcome back to the panel. Time for the weekly broadcast of the Cook Street Chorus, our resident complaints choir. Complaints sent in by listeners. Send them into us and we'll convert them into an art form, if you can call it that. A couple of choir members away this week, actually. Can either of you sing?
Good Lord, no.
Karaoke after drinking.
We recorded anyway. Here's what's been on your mind in the last few days.
Why should my ex-wife get half my super when she earned far more than I did for the time we were together?
Bill.
Because women, we do far more work. It never stops, it never stops, it never stops. We all go hell for leather.
Work, let me tell you, my job is so tough,
says Brendan.
60 hours a week and still that's not enough. He's burnt.
Why is it my attention always seems to wander when you read the weather?
Ron.
I only hear the forecast for the Chatham Islands.
Get yourself together. We'll read it backwards from now on for you, Ron. And we'll call out your name when we reach Hamilton. How's that then?
This from Sarah.
Number plates on cars, why are they so lame-o? What are people thinking? W4GON doesn't spell wagon unless you've been drinking.
Why not put tosser or moron on a plate? Perfect descriptions, not hard to create. Just saving. I spent hours on makeup, but a vital piece is missing.
Hello.
Who cares if you're in a bar and lesbians are kissing?
There's
new owners in our takeaway.
On Friday nights, the fishing and the chipping's not the same.
Why can't things just stay the same?
That's a very good question. Why can't things just stay the same? Are you the same with the weather forecast? Do you always miss out on the bit of the forecast that refers to you?
Every single time.
Me as well. You, David Farrah?
I check the forecast on my iPhone. So, no.
Trust you to be techie and efficient about it.
There was great singing, though. Was that your dulcet tones we heard there?
Only because we were short. We were a bit short this week of members. Not short of comments, but short of members.
You know, I think it's an anti-Auckland thing, always starting off with Auckland on the weather forecast, because they know people aren't listening. They know it's like the guy says, I only hear the Chatham Islands. We should save Auckland till the end. There you go.
Do any of the personalised plates annoy you? People, more than one complaints come in about personalised plates, but do they annoy you, or are you just used to them, all the funny spellings now?
They are what they are. It's not a question of being annoying. You know, like if you've got that kind of money to spend on that kind of conspicuous consumption, better look to you.
I remember being affronted when the first misspellings appeared all those years ago, but like anything, you get used to it.
There was one plate that annoyed me and challenged me for around 5-6 years. It was our neighbours, and it was 1CYMRU. And I kept thinking, ICYMRU. And I could not work out how the M fitted. And for 5 years, I kept trying to work out every day I'd walk past it until I finally asked, and they said, we're Welsh, and that's Wales for Welsh. So it wasn't actually an acronym, One Cymru.
Yeah, I can understand how that would baffle you, because you were trying to work out the
wrong
thing.
Well, it was so close to it, because you most of them work, C-Y-R-U.
Yeah. I see why.
M-R-U.
Yeah.
But the M just didn't quite work.
Indeed. Right. David and Steve are with us on a Friday. What would they like to bring to the table themselves? Steve, anything on your mind?
I had a very pleasant evening on Saturday, staying at home, avoiding One Dimension. Read a fantastic book by a fellow named David Crystal, who's Professor of Linguistics, I believe, University of... somewhere in Wales, oddly enough. I forget, it's Cardiff or Bangor. Fantastic book called The History of English in 100 Words. Absolutely brilliant.
in 100 words.
Yeah, well, he doesn't actually write a book of 100 words. That would be very, very short and rather disappointing. No, he picks 100 words that are emblematic of the way that English is developed.
Okay.
It's a fantastic read. And there's, I mean, as you mentioned before, Jim, I teach physics, but I used to teach English, and I've got quite a linguistics background. I'm really into that kind of stuff. So it was very, very, very pleasing for him to see him pointing out that the two words grammar and glamour have the same root, the same origin. People forget this sometimes, that grammar is, in fact, quite glamorous. I love it. I mean, another one that comes to mind that I thought was brilliant was the way that the word what originated in English. It started off in Anglo-Saxon as a word that storytellers would use in the old mead halls. They would stand up and they would shout out, what, as a way of starting off a story. Beowulf starts off that way.
So it's a bit like a mini version would be saying so at the start of our sentence.
Precisely. I mean, you've got that wonderful sharp drawing of air with the and then the wonderful stop at the end of it with the what. And it's just intended to get people's attention. And I think that, frankly, Jim, you should start beginning your shows like this in future.
What?
Exactly. What? This is Jim Morrow with The Panel.
I didn't know glamour and grammar had the same.
Yeah, it's from the Latin Grammatica. It started
off.
They
both are?
Originally, yes. Okay. Brilliant.
Okay, the history of English in 100 words.
Yes, lovely stuff.
Maybe we could do an entire show in Latin. for the classical buffs.
Quid quay.
A, you would have to spend hours recording it, and B, who would then listen? Even those people whose Latin is still vaguely, you know, extant from school or even university.
Amor amas amat amamus amatus amant.
They can probably read it, but they can't. They wouldn't be able to decipher it. I mean, heard.
Mm-hmm.
You've had better ideas, David Farrow. A number of them, I think.
Probably today.
What are you thinking about?
Te Papa. People may have seen that the City Council has provisionally voted to chop funding for Te Papa from $2.25 to $1 million.
Ita Vero.
Indeed. And there's two things that really concern me about this. The first is that Te Papa weren't told in advance. They were told the day of the meeting, oh, by the way, we may chop your funding this afternoon. And I think that's just ridiculous for what should be a strategic partnership to do it like that. But even worse is 70% of that funding comes from what they call the downtown business levy. This is levied on businesses in the tourism sector. It's specifically to fund things which bring tourists to Wellington, Te Papa being the number one. Every single business supports Te Papa's funding not being cut. But the council's cut it against their wishes so it can spend what's meant to be dedicated money for tourism on other spending projects. Hopefully the council may see sense and actually reverse that decision. But the last time there was a vote, you need two councillors to flip. But I think economically it would be a disaster to actually cut the funding, because it means Te Papa would have to cut services. But also, I have to say, as a Wellingtonian, by having Te Papa here, we don't have to fund as much towards the local art gallery and the local museum like Auckland does, because we've got the National Museum here too. So personally, I actually think we do fairly well out of that funding.
Te Papa, they were aghast, weren't they? They had the post-it notes up around the building, didn't they?
Yeah.
In reaction. Saying, look, some, you know, object, put up a post-it note. So they cut that by 55%, is that right, David?
Yeah, I think even a bit more than that. You're right, 55.6%.
And Te Papa weren't informed, and this was a complete surprise to everybody when it was announced.
Yeah, and it's been that solid funding for 10 years, and as I say, only 30% of that comes from ratepayers. 70% comes from business and the tourism sector, who absolutely are behind that. So I think it's one of those things where, look, the City Council having trouble balancing their budget. What do? You look at your biggest items of expenditure and say, well, you know, they get most of their funding from the government. Let's just cut the funding there without thinking through the ramifications.
But to use more Latin, the modus operandi of this, it's a daft way to go about doing it, isn't it? Because you just pass the draft long-term plan, but you kind of flick it onto the table and what? Hope nobody notices. Was there any prior suggestion that this was going to be done.
No, not at all. In fact, the irony is that seems they only thought that morning of telling Te Papa because the council meeting was actually being held at Te Papa. And they suddenly thought, they might have people here listening to us and hear that we're about to cut their funding. So we better give them a heads up.
So is this the way to run things, is the simple question, isn't it? I mean, why would you run things like that?
Yeah, well, I think this is the trouble when you have a lack of, I'm not trying to be personal here, but strong leadership with the council, where at the moment it's all coming down to 5-7 votes, 6-8 votes. So it's very hard to be able to say this is definitely what we're doing, what we're not doing, and saying if we want to do this, let's make sure we talk to people in advance.
All right. David Farrar, thank you. Steve McCabe on the panel. Let's talk about TVNZ7 and then see what else we've got time for as we head for 5 o'clock. A small but very dedicated group is still lobbying for the continuation of the public service TV channel TVNZ7. Despite it seeming to be a done deal that it's closing down, the government's certainly firmly resolved to have it closed down. It's more than a year now since the last Broadcasting Minister, Jonathan Coleman, announced that funding would be discontinued and it's going to be gone for good in June this year. But a Facebook group imploring supporters of TVNZ7 to protest its closure to the government was formed ahead of the announcement, along with an online petition, and they're still urging people to sign it. Do you wonder why these TVNZ7 supporters are continuing to bang on about saving it when the government's been firm on dumping it for a long time?
Well, if it's something you feel passionately about, you've got to keep on fighting the good fight. And coming from Britain, where we do have a well-established tradition of public broadcasting, I'm of the opinion it is a fight worth fighting. I mean, it'd be a shame to see the end of public TV.
How do you feel about it, David Farrar?
I think public broadcasting is very important, but I think TVNZ7 is definitely not the correct model. In fact, a BBC-type combined broadcast to radio and television would be a preferred model. The reality with TVNZ7, despite some very good quality programs, tiny, tiny viewership. We're talking sometimes 0.1% of the population only tuned in. And you just can't have that small numbers. The problem is TVNZ can't be both a commercial and a public service broadcaster. So they had TVNZ7, they got the money for it, but they never promoted it. They never promoted the programs on TV1 because they don't want people watching the non-commercial one. It takes away from ad revenue. If you want public broadcasting, you actually need a dedicated broadcaster. However, $15 million isn't going to do it. You can't have a standalone TV station for 15 mil. If you combine the budgets for Māori TV, Radio New Zealand, TVNZ7, and the New Zealand On Air funding, you're getting up to a couple of $100 million. For that, you might actually be able to have a quite nice public service combined broadcaster.
You could have a licence fee, David.
Well, I was working for the government that got rid of that, and it wasn't a popular thing, the licence fee. In fact, what was most popular was how to avoid it.
Yeah,
people would deny they have TVs or hide them, and those spy trucks would drive around with transmitters trying to detect if you were lying about it.
I know, but looking back, was it such a bad idea in retrospect, the licence fee?
Well, look, I think public broadcasting was a public good. It should be funded out of public taxation. I don't think that's an issue. Because, for example, I thought it was silly that you fund Radio New Zealand based on who's got a TV set.
You've answered your minuscule audience question, haven't you, with your observation about the lack of promotion of the channel?
Yeah, I think that was a major part of why more people didn't watch the programmes. Partly they're never going to be mass appeal programmes, and that's not a problem. But there is a happy medium between 0.1% and the sort of 10 to 20% that the Shortland Streets of the world get.
Independent TV producer Miles Thomas is the organiser of the Save TVNZ7 group on Facebook. Miles joins us now. Hello, Miles.
Hi there, how are you?
Thanks for coming on. Do you honestly think the government can be swayed from its course?
Well, they've been swayed before in regards to keeping Radio New Zealand funding as it was. So, yes, I do. I do believe that, yeah.
How many signatures have you got on that petition now, do you know, Marth?
Last time I looked this morning, it had jumped to 12,875. And it's climbing pretty rapidly at the moment. It's probably got a few more hundred.
Okay.
It's doing well. I mean, there's lots of people out there who really care about it.
Although 12,875 doesn't seem huge.
Well, it's not saying that there's 12,000 viewers. That's just people who can be bothered to actually go and sign the petition.
Yeah.
You know, that corresponds to probably many, many, many more, hundreds of thousands of people who care about it. You know, it's like the Radio New Zealand petition or Facebook page got up to 30,000, I believe, and that's kind of considered the benchmark. But Radio New Zealand's been going for, you know, 40 or 50 years. TVNZ7 has only been going for 3 or 4 years.
David Farris,
that many is pretty impressive.
Okay, David Farris is quite wise in these matters, I imagine, in terms of what numbers sway governments. How many signatures do you think you'd have to have on a petition for the government to start thinking differently?
I don't think that at this stage any number of signatures will change a decision 6 weeks, 8 weeks out from implementation. It is sadly, for those who want to change, too late. Earlier on, it's not so much about numbers when it comes to swaying the government. It's about whether people are going to change their vote on it. So sometimes the government, like the anti-smacking law, 85% say we want to change. The government says no, because in the end they decide people won't swap their votes on it. So it's not just numbers, it's really the intensity of feeling.
Okay. So, Miles, the government's backing on New Zealand probably not feeling that intensely about the retention of TVNZ7 as well.
Well, you know, that's totally their decision, and they may come to rue that. But, you know, what can we do? We can only voice our opinion and not let it go quietly, not let it disappear. I mean, it's the end of an era, really. We've had some form of public service TV for so long, and it's going to be switched off.
Let's talk some more about why we need it then.
Just one point. We still will have public service broadcasting. New Zealand On Air spends over $100 million a year.
That's what I was going to...
We just won't have TVNZ7.
This is Craig Foss's argument, Miles, and this is what I'll put to you. Do we need television public service broadcasting if you accept the government's argument that it can be spread across platforms with New Zealand On Air money?
Well, there's two parts of that. No, you need a dedicated channel so that people can go to the channel and know that they're going to get it. People don't, not everyone uses a PVR, not everyone watches a program specifically to watch it. You know, they'll just switch on. That's one of the beauties of TVNZ7 is you can switch on and you know you're going to get something that's interesting and of a certain quality. So that's you know, I think it's really important to have a dedicated channel. The other issue about New Zealand On Air is it's entirely hamstrung by what the channels will actually play. And it can't actually fund public service broadcasting because channels don't want to play it because it doesn't rate.
Okay. No, that's an interesting argument. And the other argument against doing it, David Farrer, if I may put it to you, is that what you're doing is simply subsidising commercial broadcasters by giving them money to make something, you know, quote, worthy, unquote, and put it on their channel.
That certainly can sometimes be the issue there. I mean, look, New Zealand On Air decisions, there's some great non-commercial stuff they fund, some of the Sunday documentaries. I think the Tangawhai disaster, stunning. But others like, what's that, New Zealand's Got Talent, I probably share the views of others there that I think we could survive without funding that.
Yeah, but they only fund like 4 hours worth of documentaries a year. It's not exactly what we're. It doesn't replace TVNZ7 by any stretch. And most of the public service broadcasting that they do fund, for example, Q&A or Attitude and those minority shows, air on a Sunday morning when no one is around to watch them. And that's why they play them, because they, you know.
Yeah, they still get quite a lot higher audiences than TVNZ7 did.
We are consuming media differently, Miles, aren't we? We live in an age of proliferating media and diverse methods of consuming it. Is the idea of a channel or a station just getting old-fashioned now?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, absolutely. The technology is diversifying at a rapid rate. You still need someone to make it, make the programs, and that's where the main bulk of the TVNZ7 funding goes to, is actually making programs. And, you know, there's the internet doesn't really, it provides plenty of outlets, but it doesn't provide any forms of actually making the programs. And that's the real issue. And I don't see, you know, the TV channels are not exactly an embracing of new technology either. You know, they've got plenty of on-demand and that sort of thing, which you can access on your phone and so forth. So I think technology is a smokescreen to the real issue, which is that someone just doesn't like public service broadcasting.
The real issue is, as an emailer, Judith, sees it, is that TVNZ shows the stories that haven't got a hope of being aired anywhere else, which is another way of saying what you've just been saying, I think, Miles. Do you agree with that, Steve McCabe?
Well, I'm concerned that we're not going to go down the US path. I spent quite a while living there, and I did from time to time watch American TV, and where everything is commercial broadcasting only. There is, to all intents and purposes, zero in the way of public access TV. The only shows that ever make it to air are going to be shows that have market tested well. That are going to get big audiences in. You occasionally get good shows. I mean, programs like The Sopranos, for example, was a fantastic piece of TV. I've just finished watching one called Homeland, which is also very good. But for every time you get one of those coming on, you're going to get two or three dozen simply formulaic, playing to lowest common denominator programs. You get during the day, you get inane talk shows. I mean, Jerry Springer was the apotheosis of dreadful.
Yes.
And then in the evening, you'll get basically celebrity vehicle sitcoms, or you'll get formulaic procedurals.
All right, so...
With commercials every 5 minutes.
So public service broadcasting in terms of television shows what you can aspire to, even if you don't.
Yeah, that should at the very least be the goal that we're aiming toward, with the commercial-only model being something to avoid at all costs.
All right. So, Miles, you're going to fight the good fight for as long as you can, are you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Miles Thomas. He's the organiser of the Save TVNZ7 group on Facebook. So, David Farrell, what would your solution be then, given that we're not going to go back to the days of a licence fee, and given your argument that you can't be all things to all viewers, you can't be commercial and public service, what would you do in the end?
Short term, I would encourage the producers of the shows like Backbenchers, The Court Report, Media 7, to try and find a broadcaster who will apply to New Zealand On Air for funding. And you know who I think might be the most likely, even though wouldn't get to everyone, would probably be Sky. And you might say only half the population have Sky, but they're only being watched by 0.1% before. That will still give people the opportunity. Medium term, I think it would have to wait till the books are back in surplus, but I would like to see a government do a serious investigation into the pros and cons and the costs of a combined radio and television public service broadcaster.
If you can spread the public service broadcasting across platforms like Sky, why do you need that combined radio and television public service broadcaster at all, if you're making those decisions at the top of government?
Well, I think Sky, you know, will only put public service broadcasting on generally if it's funded by someone like New Zealand On Air. They do a bit of other stuff. They do election debates, etc., as their contribution there. But I think there is a role in society for both what Radio New Zealand currently does and shows like The Court Report, Media 7, where you critically examine some of the issues of the day. But having said it, if only 0.1% of the population are watching them, you're almost pouring money down a black hole. You actually have to have it on a platform where it can actually be promoted to a wider audience.
Yeah, but we know that the real audience for that kind of broadcasting is probably closer to 10% than 0.1%.
Yeah, I think, you know, the definition of success isn't beating Shortland Street. It is getting a few percent. I talked about The Nation and what's the other one? Q&A.
Yeah.
And yes, they're on at weekends, but they sometimes, you know, get up to 1% or 1.5%, I think, in the ratings, etc. Which, you know, isn't too bad for that sort of broadcasting.
All right. A last thing to ask you before you go. A new survey claims to have pinpointed the perfect seat on a typical passenger aircraft. The study, carried out by the flight comparison website Skyscanner, suggested that passengers prefer a window seat towards the front of the plane. A survey of 1,000 airline passengers, and in a nutshell, seat 6A is the one they like best. Is that the seat you like best, do you think?
Well, given the choice, I'll take the one at the very, very front of the plane that's driving. But they won't let me do that. I mean, there's a reason why first class is at the front of the plane. It's always going to be the most comfortable ride. It's going to have the least engine noise. That's why they stick first class up there. So, yeah, I mean, if you're asking me, do I want to be in first class every time? Absolutely.
Okay, let's say it's not first class. It's just cattle class right through the plane. Would you still need to sit in seat 6A?
Well, it's still going to be preferable, isn't it? You're going to be closer to the exit for boarding and deplaning, as they insist on calling it these days.
Right.
Loathsome phrase.
Okay.
That's going to be a bonus. You will get a smoother ride. You're going to get less. Okay. You're going to experience less turbulence at the front.
All right.
You're going to experience less engine noise. It's got to be preferable.
Makes sense to you, David Ferrer?
I tend to go for 1A or 1F on domestic flights because I like having no one in front of me, and you can also chat to the airline staff from there. But on international flights, I hate being stuck in, so I'll actually go aisle seats, 1C or 1D on international flights.
That was my last question, whether you prefer window or aisle. You're window, obviously.
Window on domestic, aisle on international. I don't like, if it's going to be more than a couple of hours, having to climb over people to take a lavatory break.
Okay. And I'll amplify what David said. I absolutely agree.
All right, thank you. Steve McCabe, David Ferrer. Have a lovely weekend, gentlemen. Thank you.